Hello and welcome to 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And we are listening to episode 45.
The big 4-5, Grant.
Oh, middle age. That's his, oh wait, so technically, in my humble opinion, there's a small little bump on the hill, right over the hill. I feel like partway down, there's a little bump, and that's 45. You got to kind of deal with mid-age among mid-age.
Wow, yeah.
And here we are. What a milestone.
Consider this our apology to any 45-year-old listeners.
Well, no, I think it's, you know, it depends on how you age. Some age well, some age poorly.
I like to say it gracefully or not gracefully.
Okay. To each his own. And isn't that the beauty of life? And I think our Staragast has aged quite well, but I don't know. Damn it. I botched the intro, but that's fine. You know what? This is very apropos because, you know, if Jordan Brady botched the intro, he would just carry on. And our first episode with him, we had like a technical malfunction with my computer. And we just had to keep going, Vince.
Yes, we certainly did. And he was very understanding. And you could see that sort of understanding personality come through in our discussion where we talked about Respect the Process, which is also the name of his podcast, which you should all listen to.
Yep.
But it's basically doing things the right way and doing it for a reason. And that's what we talked about.
Yeah, and he's a commercial director, a film director. He used to be a stand-up comedian. He's done a couple of documentaries. And this is the episode that I fanboyed because I've been following his work for a while. He's working in the field that I'm kind of interested in. And so I was like super pumped that he took the time. And I pretty much listened to every episode of his podcast, which is really good. Talk about commercial filmmaking. I think you can find that at jordanbrady.com. Worth looking into. Sometimes respecting the process, Vince, means having your tools in line and not wasting time. And this week, I want to thank PDF Pen Pro 7, which is for OS X, for Mac, for respecting our process and sponsoring the show. You know, we talk a lot about a text expander, which like expands these little snippets. PDF Pen Pro basically makes working with PDFs way easier, whether that's signing documents, whether that's searching through them. It can OCR text and read the actual words that are written. You can highlight things. You can use it with iCloud. It's just way easier. I hate printing out documents and then dealing with them. It's madness, Vince.
It's a bit weird that PDFs are such a ubiquitous file format, but we don't have like a good way.
Isn't it insane?
Yeah, it's kind of nutty actually, but that's exactly what this tool does.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found one way to get up and running with this, because sometimes some of these tools is like, well, wait, what? I know this is a powerful tool, but what is the context? There's this dude, Max Sparky, David Sparks, who's doing these videos showing how to do these common tasks. And you can check that out at smilesoftware.com/pdfpenpro/screencast/index.html. Okay, it's a bit of a – we're going to show
we'll
notes
link
that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
thank you
those,
so much
guys,
to Smile Software.
Yeah.
And thank you, Jordan Brady, for your veritable treasure trove of stories and an awesome episode. And thank you, listeners, as always, for tuning in. This is episode 45, Respect the Process.
You know, Daddy always said, measure once, cut twice. Or no.
Measure twice, cut
I think
once.
It's the other way.
Either way.
It's the other way around. Well, Daddy was a drunk.
All right, Vinny. I'm curious. I've been wondering this all day long. I'm like, I cannot wait to ask Vince. I just was like, I was almost biting my nails.
I can just picture
it. With anxiousness at wondering what you're working on. What are you putting your time into?
No, I mean, everyone's heard me talk at length about Samsung, so I'm not going to talk about Samsung. What I will talk about is something a little bit melancholy.
Oh.
And that is the other tiny pet podcast project that I, in front of the show, Elliot Mattson, have been working on called the Cosby Cast these last few months, which started as a means of us like working on our improvisation and our kind of riffing in a comedy sphere. And we are wrapping that up because of recent pop culture news related Cosby drama. So we no longer thought the cast was in good taste given the facts that have been brought to light about Mr. Cosby. And it's lost a little bit of its magic. So we're going to be recording the last few episodes this weekend, and that's a wrap. The Cosby cast is dead.
My heart weeps. I'm a big fan of the cast.
Thanks, man. And we, I'll take this opportunity to shout out to the new season of Topics with Michael Ian Black and Michael Showalter, which was our inspiration for the show, and we're both huge fans. So, if you guys want that sort of humor, better and not about Bill Cosby, listen to Topics.
Yeah, that's actually great.
But yeah, so that's what I've been working on. What about you, Grant?
That's nice.
What have you been putting your time into recently?
Thank you so much for asking. Man, I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Jamming on some projects. Got some stuff we're pitching. Some stuff that hopefully you're going to be working on with me. Mm. Finally broke that script I was working on. Working on a little bit of a short film script. Kind of a story I'm adapting.
What does breaking it mean?
You know, it's like you broke the story. Like you cracked the case.
Got it.
Yeah. So I feel like I finally have the full arc. I have the scenes kind of
you
plotted
reached a
out.
Level of understanding.
Yeah, and it was tough because I wrote a short story, maybe like a 25-page short story a while ago, and now I'm trying to adapt it for a screenplay, and it's like a totally different beast. And especially when there are things that we want to make on our own, it's like you have to take a lot of things into consideration. You don't want to dilute your story, but you also cannot. I'm not going to write in, you know, a $100,000 special effect.
Right,
as you know.
Probably not.
Related, I think. Our guest working on a lot of film projects. He's a commercial man. He's got a movie. Originally a stand-up comedian, which I want to dig into a little bit. Somebody who I've been following for a while, and I am like so pumped. I mean, I've been talking about this one for a while, man.
Absolutely, and fellow podcaster.
Yeah, and I listen to his podcast, which is Respect the Process. About filmmaking, one of the best filmmaking podcasts I've ever listened to. Wow. Mr. Jordan Brady, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Guys, thanks for having me. What a great intro. As I told you offline, I'm so invigorated by your creativity and your positivity and the fact that you do stuff. Like, you don't just talk about it. You actually make stuff and do it.
Man, that is
high
praise. Hey,
that's great to hear. It means a lot. Thank you.
And now,
likewise, I mean,
absolutely, Grant, you do the honors.
Yes, thank you, Vince. Mr. Brady, could you tell us what you're putting your time into? What are you working on?
What am I working on? I'm working on keeping a promise to myself to belt out a weekly podcast.
Wow, it's a thankless process sometimes, right?
It is, and you wonder if you're reaching anybody, and that's why like tonight is so special for me because we connected.
Yeah.
All through the magic of potting. And, you know, because sometimes you're doing it, I'm just talking to myself. Who's
right?
Listening? What's going on?
Well, in your case especially, you know, you're running a solo podcast. I really respect your intros. He has who you have, Helen?
Helen is in the booth.
She's in the booth. I've never heard her voice yet, but I mean, I guess I have heard her intro you.
Yeah,
but
she
it's
does
a very
intro.
Stylized intro.
You know what's so funny? So I buy that intro,
yeah,
right, from Music Creative. I should know. Music Creative, I think it's out of London.
Sure.
And you type what you want and you click on different voices.
That's
like
amazing.
Australian woman, you know, Irish man. There's an Irish guy that I've had do like an iTunes thing.
Yeah.
And
that's great. That sounds really good, man.
It's pretty funny. So, you know, I paid for it over a year ago, and that's Helen. And her name really is Helen, the voice actress who did the bit. And so I just started talking to her, and it has its roots in Bob Newhart. There's a great comedy album from, I'm going to say, the late 60s, early 70s, The Button-Down Mind of Bob Newhart. And it was a huge hit where he does these fake phone conversations. And you know what the other person's saying by the way Bob Newhart talks on the phone. Like, no, Mrs. Smith, I didn't come through your screen door. Or, you know, that's
right.
Example. But,
yeah.
And so you know what she asked. And, no, that wasn't me. No, I would never wear your slippers. and so that's what I do with Helen. But it's funny because I do meet some people who are like, hey, why don't you let her talk more?
Oh my god,
that's priceless.
That's fantastic.
They don't even get the bit.
Yeah, no, it's a great bit. I really, really like it.
Well, thank you.
So maybe there's a good place for us to start. I mean, topically, we're really ripping you off. We're stealing like artists,
which is something we love to do on the show, is rip people off.
Yeah, it's a huge
how are you
I'm
just
kidding.
Say you're paying homage.
There we are It's all about the spin, or all about the story, not the spin.
A tip of the hat.
There you go. So topic today, respecting the process. That is, of course, the name of your podcast, Respect the Process. Fantastic podcast. And I think we're just kind of digging into what that means. I kind of want to hear your take on it. You're talking to your guests a lot about that. Vinny, what does that mean to you? What is this topic?
Well, first, can I tell you how I got it?
I think that's fair.
Okay, so I direct commercials. It's my passion. It's my livelihood. Mm-hmm. That's my gig, right? I'm a commercial filmmaker. And
a good one.
Thank you. And sometimes I will go to regional markets, and you adopt a local crew, or primarily a local crew. Maybe you bring a DP. I've been to places where I was the only person from out of town, and everybody on the crew knew each other.
Wow!
And then I'm the director, so I'm the captain of the ship. And I notice it gets a bit familiar, and people are talking, and people, you know, that's the one thing I hate is people talk on set.
Yeah.
Or they're loud when they're working. You know, you've heard stories like Clint Eastwood. It's really quiet, and everybody has little walkie-talkie headsets and everything. So I'm not that crazy. I'm not that nutty, but I would yell out, quiet, everyone. Respect the process. We're here to capture a magic moment on film. And it's not that and it's done with humor to keep everybody energized, but really, like, at some point the level on set can get so crazy that the actors, like, if you got an actress that's got to remember her line and deliver some comedic bit, they need to focus. So, you know, have a jovial atmosphere, but at the same time, respect the process that we're all here to capture the one moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're not here to get the great, you know, we're all here, we want to get great shots. But our main purpose is, beyond even having fun, is to capture it, and then we'll piece it together in editing, and we'll, if we do it right, we'll all get to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I started saying respect the process one time. I was in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah, not too far from us.
The local crew, and the romantic version is, guys, I jumped out of a small Cessna with one of those flying squirrel suits and landed to direct a local bunch of actors and a local bunch of crew. And because I really was by myself, like, I knew no one when I landed, they picked me up, I had a great time. And now I have, you know, 55 new friends, but they kept saying that back. They were like, respect the process. And at the end of the shoot, this was the biggest shoot they'd had in Des Moines in years. The one of the producers had t-shirts made, like, respect the process. And they would always go RTP. And they, like, I didn't even realize that I said it so often just to politely tell people to shut up.
Yeah.
I mean, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. It's funny. The two things I'm thinking of right there are, one is, you know, comedy is, it usually comes from a pretty serious and dark place. And that it is. You're delivering a pretty serious message there with comedy, but you're injecting it in there. The other thing I was thinking, a DP that we work with a lot, a guy named Kevin Horn out here, super talented, shoots a lot of the stuff we're working on. Whenever we would get a little bit frenetic on set and, like, you know, thinking too far ahead in terms of shots or setups or whatever, he would say, hey, one shot at a time. And, we actually had some one shot at a time t-shirts made up.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and that's true. That's true. Someone was watching a big movie with a friend of mine and some people, and the one guy, he's a creative director at an ad agency. And he goes, no, if you were doing a movie of that size, like, would that be overwhelming? And I was like, well, it's really shot by shot. I mean, it's, you know, it's like walking, right? You put one step in front of the other.
Totally.
And eventually you arrive.
And eventually you do. You check it off your list.
Here I am.
the other one I'm fond of saying on set is, slower is the new faster. Because sometimes people will hurry and rush to, like, we got to get this done, we got to do this. And it's like, okay, first of all, let's be safe. Second of all, like, let's do it right once. You know, Daddy always said, measure once, cut twice. Or no.
Measure twice, cut
I think
once.
It's the other
way. Either way.
It's the other way around. Well, Daddy was a drunk. But respect. So that's where
Let's dig into that a little bit. Your father issues.
You're right.
The literal genesis of respect the process in my life came from that. But as I've done the podcast and talked to other creative people like yourselves, and then when I think of my own process, it also means write the treatment. Respect the process means I get a storyboard from an ad agency and respect that they've lived with this for 6 months.
Yeah.
And there's probably an idea they love more that didn't get sold.
Yeah.
So how can I mine their creativity and get some of that original juice spilled onto this thing we're doing?
I think
so. You know, just don't take it at face value. Respect the process that went into everything to bring a great script to me.
Absolutely. I was just thinking it'd be a valuable exercise for, I don't know what your listenership is like, but I come from more of an advertising sort of, I guess I'm more into the advertising, or have been more into the advertising side of things versus the filmmaking production side of things. And man, so many valuable insights on your end, like listening to your podcast, that I think would influence the way creatives at agencies would approach the work and would understand how to work with you better. So it's like a really interesting dynamic there. But when you say respect the process, what jumps to me is like trusting the process, is trusting that if I set aside 2 hours to think about this and put the time into this, you know, I can trust and I don't need to go crazy, even though I might have the wheels turning. And the other thing is like showing up. It's the professionalism. It's, you know, you get comfortable sometimes with the process, but that doesn't, you need to respect it. You can't just get comfortable in like a groove. Professionalism is showing up, you know, on time. It's knowing, you know, all of the little inputs and steps that are required to actually get a thing done.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Professionalism. That's a great point, Grant. It's, you know, and protocol.
Yeah.
So for instance, I just shot two sort of not branded films, but they were for an advertiser through an agency, but there were these little short films, like 4 minute films.
Sweet.
And I said, okay, well I'll do the first edit because this is less a spot and it's more of a mockumentary thing, which is in my comedy wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And I was getting frustrated with the lack of communication, and I knew one of the two executive creative directors, one on the project, one at the agency. I know the head of the agency. And part of me is like, fuck, I can just email them. Yeah. I just email my cut to those guys and I can skip all this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to respect the protocol that, well, I'm not, that would be, first of all, that's a dick move if I did that. But I did think about it. You know? I did think about it, and instead I went through the proper channels, and it turns out, and I think this is a valuable lesson that I learned, it's like, it was kind of all in my head. Yeah. It's just that everybody else was so busy, and a lot of ad guys are overworked. You know, they're working on
I'm sitting next
three
to
projects,
one of them.
Yeah, three or four projects at a time, and you're trying to get stuff sold, and you got to help this, you know, tweak her project. She's coming in on yours. You're doing this. So I just took a breath and I said, no, just respect the process that they're off doing a bunch of things. And I'm sitting here with the one thing that's super important to me. And I'm just sharing like some thoughts that I had about, I wasn't really going to do it, but that's respecting the process. Yeah. And then today I disrespected the process.
Ah, okay.
Which I did an episode with two of my favorite directors. They're a team called the Pelorian Brothers.
You've had them on your podcast before.
And on my podcast, they said, sometimes you got to fuck the process to get what you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so today, yesterday I saw a comp of, you know, an effect, and the coloring was done technically the correct way, that the shot that was going to be put into the plate shot, they were color corrected to match each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you should do it. The process was respected, but it didn't yield the best result.
Uh-huh.
And I had shot a test, which is another way that you can respect the process is, you know, get your video camera and some Barbie dolls and shoot a fucking test. Yeah. Like, is it going to edit together? Or
yeah.
take the storyboard and scan it into iMovie,
yeah.
for instance, and yeah. see if it's going to be 30 seconds instead of 47. Mm-hmm. But when I saw the final comp, I was like, I knew, not final, but we were 85% done. I should have been done. I should have I cashed my check, should have moved on in life. But I just had to speak up and go, you know, and I called the effects guy. I go, you got to change it. It's not good. And I called the agency and said, we can do better. We worked awful long and hard to get to this place. So I'm fucking the process.
Did you use that terminology?
No. I'm right. more professional.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, that's my rambling.
No, but that's interesting though, because I don't see that as, maybe I am misinterpreting the process and what it, the real kernel is, but that to me doesn't seem like fucking the process. That seems like actually respecting it, because even though people did things the right way, the goal is to, as you said, capture that moment, get the magic on film, get the exact right thing in front of the right people. And you did what you had to do to get there. I think that's maybe a deeper level of respecting the process, even though you went against the conventional correct way to do something. I don't know.
Amen. And I think that's what the Plorian brothers were saying. Mm-hmm. You know, on a shoot the other day, I told the DP, I said, just zoom in on that guy during the take. And listeners, you know, when you're working with an agency and a client, and it's very collaborative, you want to check off that everybody's cool with the shots you've done before you move to a new shot. Mm-hmm. And by me telling the DP, just zoom in on the guy and stay on that guy, in a way, I'm going rogue.
Yep.
You know, it's like rogue filmmaker going, look, just fuck what everybody thinks we're going to do. We're just going to shoot this. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But that's a thing, though. Like, you sometimes it's almost you're respecting the fact that you need to, that you can't possibly explain that, almost based on their position and their whatever, you can't expect them to make this decision. And so you're making the decision that is ultimately for the greater good.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, I sling that same line, like, This is to protect them from what they don't know.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, because they want to assert themselves. They feel like they need to be valuable. And so then they right.
Yeah. And if an actor's doing something, and I don't want to draw attention to it because it's so great, and you, like, actors are living, breathing people, and they add this wonderful element to film. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, without actors, you're reading the script.
Yeah.
Unless it's puppets, that's a whole different thing. But if an actor's doing something that I see, I know as soon as I draw attention to it, either to the actor or the agency or whoever, it's going to be gone. They're going to be self-conscious. They're not going to do it. So if there's like this comedic moment, I see them doing something, I'll just say roll. And like with kids, you know, we roll, like we say 50-50. That's the term for roll the camera without telling everybody.
Nice.
So that like an AD, an assistant director, can go, 50-50, everybody, and everybody knows to just chill out, don't walk through the shot, makeup guy, don't run up and fluff her hair. We're 50-50, and a lot of the actors don't know.
Wow.
So they do this natural thing. That's why I say we use it with kids. And 50-50, and sometimes we'll do it and not even explain to anybody else in the video village, like 50-50, just get that magic moment captured on film. And it'll be great for the spot. But if we take the time to talk about it, not only do we lose the moment, but the actor or the kid won't be able to recreate it.
It's the same thing that you were just doing with, you know, with the zoom in, with don't tell the clients, don't tell it. It's, you're respecting them so much that you know that you can't, you don't want to put it on them to try and act natural in that scenario. I'm into it. People, when a camera turns on, right? They totally change.
Oh, it's, yeah, and I'm talking about professionals.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, I like it. I like it, man. It makes me kind of think about your documentary you did, which I have a ton of respect for, just because it was so rogue filmmaker, right? You just went out and got it, and you got some really cool people talking about – I mean, do you want to pitch it a little bit? I Am Road Comic, do you want to talk about it?
Oh, yeah. I Am Road Comic, available for $5 at iamroadcomic.com.
Good deal. Nice.
Yeah, or you can watch it on Hulu for free with commercials, or Hulu Plus if you subscribe. And I'm sure in the near future it'll be on other outlets that we have planned. But I Am Road Comic is sort of a follow-up to a 2010 documentary I made called I Am Comic, with like Sarah Silverman, Louis C.K., Janine Garofalo, Jeff Foxworthy, Carrot Top. You know, it runs the gamut. It was not...
Man, did you get any big names for that? Yikes.
Yeah, how about some established comedians? Yeah.
There was Roseanne Barr and Tommy Davidson, who's crazy. Tim Allen, who still does stand-up.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That's Buzz Lightyear, people.
Respect that.
Yeah. And so I made this – that was kind of like I would take film my crew from – we'd shoot a commercial on like a Wednesday or Thursday, and I would say, hey, Friday, help me out for free. We're going to interview some comedians.
Love it.
And it's a great – I Am Comic is a great-looking documentary. It was on Netflix and Showtime and everything. Yep. So then I decided I'll make another one just about the road, not really a sequel but like an addendum. Mm-hmm. So I called it I Am Road Comic, and it's kind of a funny story, guys.
Yeah.
So I make this documentary, and I have not done stand-up on the road for 22, 23 years.
Wow.
But after making I Am Comic – the landscape of stand-up has changed where it's not just club bookers and comedy clubs booking comedians. It's comedians now booking comedians. Like in the DIY era, a comedian can go book a bar, bring a bunch of friends, split the door, and create their own venues, which I applaud. It's making your own stuff, being positive, being proactive. Yeah,
exactly.
So these comedians would say to me when I would meet them, hey, do you want to do 10 minutes at my club? Hey, do you want to come on this show? And at first I said, nah, that's okay. And then I go, yeah, I'll do it because it's fun. Mm-hmm. So I start doing stand-up again, you know, around L.A., like 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there at the most. Well, then I'm on the phone with a guy who's a documentary filmmaker. And this is in the movie, and it's kind of explained in the beginning of the movie. Of I Am Road Comic, available for $5 at I Am Road Comic. He goes, hey, will you watch my documentary? It was about teaching a comedy school in Las Vegas called Finding the Funny. So I watch a rough cut. And kind of like, you know, what we talked about, and this is the whole spirit that we all share about helping one another. You know, guys that made documentaries, and specifically comedy documentaries – I sought them out on Facebook, or I went to a screening and hung out afterwards and took a guy to lunch. He helped me. Mm-hmm. Then I helped another guy who did like The Bitter Buddha. You know, Stephen Fine Arts is a young documentary director, and I helped him. And now he's obligated to help someone else.
Yeah, yeah. It's like The Ring.
Pay it. Well, okay. I was thinking Pay It Forward, but The Ring, I guess.
I see different
way.
Approaches.
Yeah.
So long story longer. Don Barnhart, the guy who made the other documentary, goes, hey, before you hang up, I book a room called Jack Diddley's up in Washington State. Yeah. And why don't you headline? And I was like, oh, yeah, funny. You know, headline, 45 minutes. I don't have that. He goes, no, good. Just do it. You take a friend. You guys can co-headline. You'll have a blast. You know, pays a couple hundred bucks a show. I'm like, wow.
All right.
The big bucks.
So I said, yeah. And this was in like February, and the gig was in July.
Nice.
So I had a few months to get together my bullshit act. And I took a camcorder and a wireless mic and one light. And then I hired a guy when I got there to shoot the show.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, was terrible. He didn't respect anything. He turned in a 4x3, you know, like grandpa TV.
Oh my God.
Ratio.
Please.
And I go, like, why would I even, like, why would you even do that?
Man, I don't know anything about filmmaking, and I even know that's just like something you don't do.
Yeah. And because I said, this is HD. You have an HD. Yeah, I got an HD camcorder. He goes, well, I figured, you know, I don't even know what he said. It blew my mind, and it was done.
It's his style. That was just his style. It's his filmmaking voice.
I took the video camera and I documented, you know, from the going to the airport on Thursday until we got on the plane to come home Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And I took one of my best friends, Wayne Fetterman, a very funny comedian, with me. And and just it's a travelogue. But I was very fortunate, having made the first movie, I Am Comic, that for I Am Road Comic, I got Mark Maron, comedian, podcaster extraordinaire.
What the flip?
Pete Holmes.
You made it weird.
You made it weird.
I'm a huge fan of his, and that's my favorite podcast. So that's
and a delightful guy too.
Yeah,
and then
he seems like one.
TJ Miller.
Oh yeah,
wow. Who did a podcast for a while? I don't think he does it.
I think he might still cashing in with TJ Miller. Maybe I could be wrong.
Yeah,
man, maybe. I don't know. He has another guy on there. Cash, another comic, I think. Ah, but either way.
He's on
guy.
Silicon Valley on HBO.
Super funny, yeah. Love that. Eldridge. Kumail, great. Like, real good. But, okay.
So, I mean, those are, and Doug Benson.
Yeah, like a million funny people. I mean,
it's really cool. And they were very candid interviews and specifically talking about the road and the joys and the benefits and whatnot. And the only people, myself, Wayne Fetterman, were both in I Am Comic and I Am Road Comic. And the only other person I doubled up on was Nikki Glaser.
Oh, yeah.
Who the young people know from MTV. When I shot her in 2009 for I Am Comic, she was living with her parents, staying in a shitty apartment from city to city doing comedy clubs. Yeah. So I thought it was just so cool to have her because she really – like I felt like I had my finger on the pulse of something that was going to be good, and she has a great career. She's very nice,
man.
Yeah, by the way, can I just say, and I've never talked about this, but it really helps if you have a cool partner if you're going to make movies and documentaries.
Yeah.
Because when I told my wife that I was going to fly to Florida to interview Nikki Glaser, a then 24-year-old blonde comedian. And she looked at me and she goes, so let me get this straight. You're going to fly to Florida. You're going to stay with this comedian who's 24, cute, and funny. And she had met Nikki when we were in Portland at a comedy festival. And that's where we met her and I decided to follow her. She goes, no, I know her. I know, but just turn that around, and I told you I was going to go film
for
my documentary, the Young Adonis, down in Miami. That would be cool with you, right?
And would it?
No.
Double standards. Love it.
But honesty, that's part of respecting the process. And actually, that's something that I like to go to next. And when you're talking about filming yourself from the beginning of this – like stand-up resurgence to the end, and you're talking about making behind-the-scenes style documentaries, getting real. That's something about respecting the process that I think is really cool. It's documenting the process. It's being honest with the process. It's turning the mirror around, which is something we like to say, and inspecting the process. And I think that's one of the best ways to respect the process is to be hyper honest and hyper real and hyper candid with how things are happening and what goes into the making of something.
Oh, amen.
And what I really liked about the, cause I watched Road Comic maybe in the last few months. And, I really liked how you made a character out of Jack Diddley's. I felt like there were just like so many weird little moments that you pulled out. And it was like, it was a nice flair for storytelling.
Thank you.
I think we would be remiss not to mention, so when you say partner, your wife, who is also an accomplished director, which that's a fascinating dynamic for me. I mean, we don't have to dig too deep into that, but I mean, that's
Jeanette
interesting.
Jeanette Godoy is her name.
I didn't want to try pronouncing that.
Jeanette's a tough name. It was
there it is.
Jeanette Godoy, a fabulous director, and she made a documentary that came out in October about young dancers with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. It's called Free to Be Me, and it's available for free. You can make a donation at freetobememovie.com. And we released it in October for Down Syndrome Awareness Month. But she did the festivals for a year with it. It's a 30-minute film. And it's interesting because we have different styles. And, you talk about truth. Like, I do things to manipulate in I Am Road Comic and I Am Comic. Like, I'll cut to something knowing it's a joke.
Yeah, right.
Whereas
right.
She's more verite. Like, there's a great documentarian, R.J. Cutler. Like, people would know the September issue where he followed the last issue of, or the September issue of Vogue magazine. Oh, yeah. It's an older documentary, and he's strictly verite, whereas I'm more of the, you know, like I like Morgan Spurlock, where he'll do something for the entertainment.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Mix it up a bit. So it's different styles, but it's great living with someone who understands what you do and you respect what they do. Her claim to fame that she hates me talking about it when she was in her 20s. Do you know this?
Well, I listened to her podcast.
Oh, okay, you know.
Well, but Vince does not know, so please.
No, I'm waiting with bated breath.
She choreographed Baby Got Back, the music video.
You're kidding.
Yeah, she was very young, in her early 20s. And so she grew up on set. Like, she did a lot of music videos, a lot of Latin music videos, choreographed live shows in Tokyo and Mexico, Buenos Aires, and Barcelona. She traveled the world as a choreographer. She started as a dancer, then a choreographer. And it's funny because Adam Bernstein directed Baby Got Back. He's a huge Breaking Bad director. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did, you know, many of your favorite episodes. And she grew up working side by side because the choreographer has to understand the camera.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You
know, the choreographer has to know how it's going to play. And she would work with a lot with Adam when she was young and say, like, okay, well, what's the shot? And we'll set up the dancing, or I'll do the dancing and you have to shoot it from over there. So it's a less obvious direct way to directing, you know, choreographing for camera. And so that's, she always wanted to direct, and after she had kids, you know, gave it a try. So I applaud her, a woman, I can't say her age, but she's in her 40s.
So I have two things. I'm first starstruck by association now because Baby Got Back was like popular as I was starting to watch music videos and as I was growing up, and it made me fall in love with this level of I don't want to say campiness. I want to say indulgence in understanding what you are as a thing.
Yeah.
And it knew exactly what it was. And that made me sincerely love it.
It expressed it so loudly.
Exactly. So
that song was the first, when you talk about honesty,
that is as honest as it gets.
Yeah. It's just, it was almost like the first time anyone said black women have big booties.
And that's something to love.
And it's something to love. And it's funny because here we are, what, 25 years later, and the booty, it's almost like last year and this year are the year of the
booty. Resurgence of the booty, yeah.
We are living in the age of the booty.
Yeah. That's, historians will look back at this era.
It's like a renaissance of booty.
Now, we're talking about
some heated moments on set.
We're talking about sometimes the moment of magic, sometimes the moment of despair.
Dismay, I was going
to
say.
Yes. Right. And let's maybe go to a third kind of moment. In our weekly only segment of the show, which is the off-topic topic. We've already gotten some great anecdotes today, so I'm really looking forward to this, hopefully.
I just hope he doesn't blow it. You know, he's been doing so well. I would hate for him to drop the ball.
A complete joy. Sure, we're talking about moments of embarrassment.
Ooh.
So
the French say embarrassment.
Pretty sure that's pretty sure it's a whole different word.
Very close.
Mr. Brady, I'm certain, I can say this for myself and for Grant. There have been moments in our life where we have just been embarrassed, and it's shaped who we are as people, for better or worse. Have there been those sort of moments for you, either inside of your career or outside?
So many. As a podcaster, the previously mentioned Pelorian brothers.
Oh, yeah.
I consider them one of the greatest guests that I've had because their work, ever since I got into commercials, their work has been the go-to reference on both sides, you know, the filmmaking side, the agency side, creatives love them. And they were ad agency guys that's direct, and they just have such a strong point of view in my opinion. And then when I got to meet them, I was a little nervous. And they were so cool, and you know, it was just wonderful. And I lost the file. I lost the interview.
Yeah. Oh no.
a place that we have been before.
We've been down that road. That is not a good feeling, is it, Mr. Brady?
It's the worst. And I don't know if it was like I didn't save it right or it didn't record right. I had a computer crash and lost some stuff, but you know, really, was that it? I want to think that. I'd rather blame the machine.
Yeah.
But I think I somehow threw away the wrong folder or something.
Oh man.
And I had to call them up and say, "Hey, I lost the interview and we had to do it again."
Oh,
and,
wow.
And they were great, and this time we did it in person, and it was wonderful. But it was so humbling to have to, you know, call and say, okay, well, I got to do it again.
To grovel, right?
Yeah. It is. It's a vulnerable, painful thing when you are asking something of people. I mean, even right now, right? What we're doing, creative loss. Man, that is one of the – I mean, there are very many
terrible
things.
It's one of Grant's great fears.
Yeah, I'm like hyper sort of anal about like my files and my structures and my things because I'm so scared of losing stuff.
But you know, in what we do as filmmakers and as podcasters, and I preach this, media management, which sounds so tedious and so uncreative, you know, it's the editor's chore. It's the podcaster's chore. Well, I try to develop my own processes. Mm-hmm. You know, I name it the raw file because then I know it's not edited. And I have a Dropbox and I won't delete it from the desktop, even though it's on the Dropbox until I've edited. You know, I just want to make sure this never happens again. It was so embarrassing.
Well, without going too far down that rabbit hole, that is like totally the thing. That is respect the process. That is professionalism. Like even getting namings, I see people using their computers and we riffed about this so much on the show, but people who are so bad at using their computers and I'm like, they're trying to be creative in quotation marks and I'm just like, man, I can be way more creative than you because I can just work faster and that stuff is out of my brain space because I have my systems down. I have my files.
They're hamstringing themselves.
Totally.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, work smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something I preach when someone will listen, and a guy at the hamburger stand, is self-imposed deadlines.
Yeah.
Make your own deadlines, write them down in a calendar. If you don't keep a calendar and you don't write them down, they don't exist.
Yeah.
And for me, it's drop a podcast on Thursday. There's no reason. There's no one putting a gun in my head. But now I know and listeners know that every week you guys are going to drop 10,000 hours.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sort of adjacent to that comes develop my own system of, you know, remember if I develop this process of files and media management. I mean, cutting a documentary is so like you have to have the way you label sequences in your edit and the way you go through footage. You have to respect a process that you've made up. Once you've made it up, you can't just like this time I'm going to use quotes. This time I'm going to, you know, put them in blue. It actually matters.
Yeah.
Because you're taking time away from creativity. Totally. If you're always trying to reinvent how you're organized.
It's making me think of, I know we're talking about embarrassing stories here, but it was making me think of the episode you did with Adam Epstein, I think. The SNL editor.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's like, he gets hit up all day long for like tips on being a good editor, but like there are so many things that are just out of the way, you know, especially working under such tight deadlines. There are just like 150 things that are just automatic that just happen that you can't walk people through really, but they're just, you develop these systems, you develop these.
But we only developed the systems because at one point,
because of our moment,
something had been fucked up and we were embarrassed about it and we vowed never to let it happen again.
Florian Brothers interview number one.
We never forget.
We fucked up episode 5. Adam Garcia, was it, right?
Mm. Oh yeah, we fucked it up not once, but then another. It was additionally.
But what an opportunity to learn.
And we've carried that with us, and in fact, I think we'd be remiss not to mention the fact that we were actually destined to record about a month ago.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. Although but, I will say these were like pretty extraneous circumstances.
This was almost beyond our control completely. In fact, it was the fault of a certain bottle manufacturer. But We were supposed to record with you, Mr. Brady, and we had to put our tail between the legs and ask you graciously, which you have done so, to reschedule on us because a errant bottle of whiskey destroyed the computer.
And we're not going to name the bottle. It's a good company. You know, it's Tin Cup Whiskey. We're not going to say it's their fault, okay?
Right. So in a certain shared bag, the whiskey had leaked into the computer and completely destroyed
unopened
it.
Bottle of whiskey, I might add.
Oh, yeah. The bottle was sealed, but the joint on the neck of it.
But listen, it's not their fault.
It's neither here nor there.
These things happen. And we're having a great interview now, and it builds character, and I can certainly relate to it.
Great. And that's why we did it.
Yeah. It didn't actually happen. This was all a device.
We sabotaged
to bond.
Grant, do you want to share with us a moment of embarrassment?
Yeah. Well, I was originally thinking about telling you the story of me in like seventh grade when the only time I think I've ever peed myself.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But
what a great moment.
I'm just going to give you that punchline and think about me peeing myself.
I'm thinking about it right now.
And then I'm going to tell you about a different one. This was a professional one maybe like 4 years ago.
Sure.
I was designing a website for someone, and this was like the biggest client we had at the time. I was working at this like startup agency thing, and I was like the lead on the project now, and we were deep into this, and I was showing comps of this website, and we had like a couple of laid-back people on the project, and then there were the higher-ups in the project. Essentially, if we were thinking about it from an agency standpoint, or even like a brand standpoint, it's like you have maybe a couple of like marketing people, but then you have like the CMO or someone, and those people, the head honchos, were in the room, and I was presenting this website, and I was going through the comps, and I pulled up one of the pages, and it was for this event thing, and there were these sponsorship tiers, and I like was explaining the design decisions and the aesthetic and whatever and the hierarchy, and the CEO of this company, this woman named Dorothy, I won't name the company, but she was a strong, like 60-year-old black woman. And she was like, "What does that say?" And I was like, "What?" She's like, "That is so unprofessional." And the third sponsorship tier, which was sort of we had befriended this guy who was partnership or whatever. It just said, it was like gold sponsor level. There was silver sponsor level, and then it said shittiest sponsor.
We had
sent this to him as a joke, and she was just appalled and was like, and I had to apologize, and it was just like mortifying.
An embarrassing moment.
Yeah. That's a well-intentioned moment that you just overlooked, right? That's a different kind of embarrassment.
Well-intentioned.
Well, like the intention was just to have a good chuckle between you and this person to generate good feelings, right? I would say that's well intentioned.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. But thanks, Minnie.
That's a good one.
What about you? Tell me about something.
So many.
Bare your soul.
So many. I was debating talking about the time I wandered into a C-level employee only meeting and took free breakfast off of their table just absentmindedly. But that's not as entertaining. I'll tell you a personal story.
Okay.
And like many of my embarrassing moments, it involves drinking at a local establishment while I was in college. And this is at a Minneapolis staple
mainstay, yeah,
Burrito Loco. I
want to go to a Burrito Loco with Jordan Brady someday.
Oh man, we should do it. If you're ever in Minneapolis, please, the burritos are on us. I had too many whatever I was drinkings, and I began to gain confidence in my ability to talk to the waitress that was serving us.
Sure.
And my thought process was to go bold because she probably was approached by a dozen men a night, every night. And what I said was, I don't remember it, but so forward that I was promptly escorted out of the building.
Wow.
Now, that's not the embarrassing part, though, if you can believe it.
Well, I can believe it.
I sit on the curb stewing in my sadness for 30 minutes, and one of my friends comes out to console me, and I say, you know, I'm inconsolable. I need to apologize to this waitress. I cannot let it stand. And so I borrow his hat and I borrow his jacket and I sneak back into the bar. And I get up to the waitress and I reveal myself to be the person who has just escorted out. And I start begging for her forgiveness and just exuding my soul on how embarrassed I am for not being a gentleman. And she, to her credit, I'm told, is very sweet about it, and she understands. She doesn't hold it against me. But before long, I made a scene and attracted the attention of a young bouncer, burly man, and he hauled my tiny frame down the stairs in front of many of my peers and a few of my coworkers, and deposited me outside. And that was the last time I snuck back into that bar.
But not the last time you tried sneaking back into a bar in general. And I have a few memories of
for another podcast.
I'm surprised you guys haven't asked me about shooting at Lee's Liquor Lounge.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You've referenced this before. You said you were saying this was like, it was a commercial you were shooting here, right?
No. This was a movie that I made 15 years ago called Dill Scallion. It's like a country music Spinal Tap.
Oh, man.
Minnesota's Peter Berg is in it.
What?
You can Google it. A lot of people.
I've never heard of this. I can't believe
show
it.
Notes no, it.
You're gonna love it. So there's a scene that we shot in, because we raised a lot of money from Minneapolis. Wow. And the producer, Joe Blake, is from Minneapolis.
Wow.
And he cast like every Joe Pitka commercial, and he's a great guy. And he and Pete Berg raised the money, and we made this movie. It's a mock documentary. Like Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls, David Koechner was his first movie. He's an Anchorman.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
The guy from Revolution, who's the dad in the Twilight movies.
Oh, for
Billy,
sure.
Billy Burke, he's Dill Scallion. And so we actually played as a band with a Minneapolis band called Trailer Trash. with our fake actor band at Lee's Liquor Lounge and filmed there.
Wow.
And it's all guerrilla. And then we did it's like, what's the – I don't know if it's still a country seven. It's like 92K country.
KQR.
That sounds like something we have.
The cat.
KRST or something.
So we shot at the radio station and really had our guy on there. And then the coup de grace was – someone from Minneapolis was booking a country music festival called WeFest.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in Detroit Lake. So we booked our act with combined with the Minneapolis Trailer Trash and our fake Dill Scallion and the Dillionaires band. We booked the opening night of WeFest, and we played and we shot and we got on the Jumbotron, and we added all this production value because we really made this band.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
That is unreal.
And some Joe knew some guy with a shampoo company who bought us like 50 T-shirts. So we had all the crowd wear the T-shirt, but then we had to ask for a lot of them back so we could use them again. and we ended up hanging out for a couple nights, and we got Willie Nelson in the movie because he was closing the show the next night. But he didn't even know he was in the movie. He was like stoned. We waited till 3 a.m. to get the shot. And then to bring it back around to an embarrassing story, we had two other producers, a producing partnership, two wonderful women, beautiful inside and out, and talented women who had produced independent films. And I don't want to get into names or anything, but
it's the Pelorian sisters.
Right.
So back in the day, okay, what happens is we would have to make VHS copies of the movie from the Avid to a VHS deck so we could give a VHS tape to somebody to – like these guys were going to do the music. So we had some beers and some tin cup whiskey.
Classic.
And Joe Blake and I are sitting and we watched the final movie before there's a score in it. And we're laying it from the computer to the VHS deck. And I had one of these super VHS decks that you could – it had like a dubbing track and had other stuff. Well, I guess I inadvertently left the microphone plugged in the VHS track or to like the PCM. I don't even know the technical thing. I think it's called a PCM track. So if you just popped in your VCR at home – it probably wouldn't play that track. You would just hear the dialogue of the movie. But if you played it on a nice VHS deck, it would play all the channels. And the music guys called us up and said, hey, you have to redo this. And they were friends of these two women. These two women hooked us up with the music guys. They were doing the mix, the music mix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dil Scallion did the music, and Sheryl Crow did like 20 minutes of original score for Dil Scallion. Jeez,
that is really unbelievable.
It's really cool. And then I have one more Minneapolis story that you'll love.
Okay.
So it turns out that while we were drinking, we were talking about how we really wanted to have sexual escapades with the two female producers.
Oh my God. Like, wow.
Oh my God.
Tail and what we would do.
Oh my God.
And how they didn't know it, but they needed it, you know, for the greater good.
Oh my. For the greater good.
There we go.
And the ladies, they called us on it. They go, "Hey, we only heard a snippet, but we just thought it was best to not hear everything because those dudes are our friends." And, you know, it was just
– oh, my God.
It was like caught – it was the ultimate caught on tape.
That's a whole nother level. I was expecting you had ruined the track and had to reshoot it because you talked drunk
over it.
It's
like better but worse.
But it's so much better.
Yeah.
The level has just been just topped.
Well, we finally finished the movie. We do all kinds of film festivals, Slam Dance and Gen X or Gen Arts in New York, and doing well. So we decide to have a premiere in Minneapolis at the Uptown Theater.
Oh, a fantastic establishment.
A favorite of mine, for sure.
Yeah.
We invite the investors. We have, you know, like country tour laminates. And we pack the theater. It's a fun night. It's great. After the movie, Sheryl Crow and her guitar player at the time, Jeff Stroud, I think his name is, they come out and play a concert because Joe Blake and Sheryl Crow had a history and she helped out and everything. The rumor is that his Purple Badness is going to show up to play with Sheryl Crow.
Classic.
Oh, my.
Now, I have been a fan since the Dirty Mind tour in the early 80s.
An original fan.
I'm an original fan. I've seen Prince many times in concert and just was a huge fan. But it's also the premiere of my first movie after a long 2.5 year haul of, you know, writing, raising money, shooting, editing, distribution, festivals and everything. So I've had a few 10 cups of whiskey.
You're celebrating.
Peter Berg, you know, now big director, then, you know, well-known actor. He's in the green room. Sheryl Crow's finished. She's in the green room. We don't think Prince is going to show up. The concert's over, but people are partying, playing music. Joe's there. The producers who heard us talk nasty are there. Lauren Graham, star of Gilmore Girls, or would become that.
Yeah.
She's there. And we're all in the green room, and we're all fucked up. And I eat these little powdered donuts, and I smear the powdered donut all over my face. And I take a mouthful, and I turn around, and I go, "Hey, Joe, when's Prince going to show up?" Now, this is during the era – this is like 2000, 1999, 2000-ish.
Yeah.
When he's not even going by Prince.
right.
He used to be.
And I say that and spray powdered donut everywhere. And people laugh. And I look and Joe goes, "He's right here."
oh, my God.
And standing next to Sheryl Crow. This is about as show business as I get.
Yeah.
Standing next to Sheryl Crow is Prince. In the green room, he had snuck in, caught the last of her act. And I look and Peter Berg is on the couch with his cocktail, and he looks at me and goes, "What are you going to do now?"
like a dream.
Yeah. Wow.
And I go, "I'm going to go meet the artist formerly known as Prince." And as I wipe the donut across off my face and walk across the room, Jordan, the artist, Jordan, "Hi, nice to meet you." Super polite.
Yeah.
I said, "You know, I've seen you four times since Dirty Mind at Virginia Beach and, you know, Controversy Tour in D.C. And he's like, "Oh, wow. Okay." I go, I'm a little tipsy. "Yeah, it's okay." And then we had a quick little chat and he vanished in a puff of smoke.
Wow.
This is classic. I've I've never met the man, but I was it. I don't want to pronounce his name wrong, but Afshin Shahidi. Am I pronouncing it right?
Oh, Afshin Shahidi.
Afshin Shahidi, DP, right from Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I was listening to his episode with you, and that was the first I'd actually heard of him, which was really cool for me to hear. But he was talking about, I remember I was walking in New York, listening to this podcast. I was walking back to Airbnb or something, and he was talking about his experience working with Prince. And I was like, he was talking about all of these projects he had done that kind of like went into the ether. And I just went, because I worked on a bunch of the Third Eye Girl layout stuff for the album they just dropped, Plectrum Electrum. And I was like peripherally working with him, but all these just random fucking like things that very much paralleled Afshin's stuff, where it's just like you're working on stuff, it disappears, all of a sudden it's now we need it now. It's just like
much like Prince, it vanishes yeah, in a puff of smoke. Yeah. But I mean I hope someday that I can embarrass myself in front of one of my idols.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's a magical sounding type of embarrassment. Like that was memorable. And the fact that
20 years in the making.
Exactly. It was clandestine. And you even embodied the spirit of respecting the process in the end, because you owned up to your tipsiness and you just confessed it to Prince himself. So I think that is a great embarrassing story to bridge us back into some final thoughts.
It's you know, when in doubt, go Obi-Wan. Let the evil strike you down. Just open your arms and admit and surrender.
Right.
And then you'll come back stronger with more of the Force.
Another Bradyism, although it owes some credit to Obi-Wan.
Kenobiism. Yeah. It's a Kenobiism first.
Yeah. It's a Kenobi. It's
a vintage Kenobi. Man, I don't want to, but I think we have to enter the final segment of the show and ask you a couple of questions, Mr. Brady, if you'd be so kind.
But before I do, you know, the fact that you have a structure. Yeah. Is really cool, and that's respecting the process. That you know, you had your questions written out, or I don't know if they're written, but you both know you have a roadmap for success on this show. Mm-hmm. You always go into that final wrap up, which I mean, it helps me as a guest. It helps when I listen. Like, okay, I can prepare myself. Yeah. This is going to end. This party can't go on forever.
That's right. It's very much a self-marshalling practice, because otherwise we would just ooze all over our guests indefinitely.
We don't have a specific shot list, but we know the scenes we need to get. We know the moments we're going for. Now let's just get everyone in the room and make some magic.
Right. So two questions, Mr. Brady, and you can just answer these in order. First, how can our listeners support you? And second, if you'd like our listeners to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would you like that to be?
Listeners could support me directly by going to iamroadcomic.com and getting a great documentary for $5.
I'd recommend it.
Yes.
Or going to Free to Be Me Movie. That's free, the number two, the word be. Me movie, free to be me movie.com, and donating to Free to Be Me. And we give a large portion of the proceeds to the actual organization, Free to Be Me Dancers, who, you know, provides this weekly dance class for the kids with Down syndrome.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, you can listen to Respect the Process. It's on iTunes, the Sideshow Network.
I would recommend
Stitcher,
it.
Everywhere you can find a podcast, you can Google Respect the Process and you better find the podcast. But and so that's a way you could support.
I would recommend they go watch Me Your Spots too. I feel like it gives some good context
for sure.
Oh yeah, that you
JordanBrady.com?
That would be good. Yeah, the spots. I mean, there's a link there, but it's superlounge.tv.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Super Lounge is our production company, and we have great directors. And then the two part answer for question two.
Ah. 2A and 2B.
One is play it forward, or what was the other one you used?
The ring.
Be the ring.
So yeah, yeah. Basically, pass along the death.
I mean, the way you guys share knowledge and creativity, and the way people have helped you and they've helped me. If more people did that and realized that knowledge, shared knowledge, isn't creating competition for yourself. Mm-hmm. Shared knowledge will somehow, and I don't know how it comes back sometimes, but I know it does.
Yeah.
I believe in that. Like I've tried to help as many people as they can. A guy asked me today about a producer's rep for my first film, mm-hmm. The first documentary, I Am Comic. And the guy called me today. This is my first film. I'm talking to this company. They gave you as a recommendation. And the first thing I said is, well, don't trust me because they gave you my name.
Right.
But here's what I think beyond that. And so I know that I'm going to have to call somebody and go, hey, how do I do this shot? How do I do that? Hey, I've never worked with a rhino. You have. What do I do? So that's my first thing. And then part B to question two is and it sounds cornball-y.
Please.
But it's follow your bliss.
Yeah.
You know, do what's – that's what makes you respect the process and fuck the process for the greater good, is when you follow your bliss and you follow that little Jiminy Cricket that says, call him, tell him the color correct. It isn't quite good enough yet. You know, a guy on my podcast who's a global creative director mm-hmm. at McCann now said – and it's a Crispinism from Alex Bogeski.
Yeah. Wasn't a Rob Reilly, was it?
It wasn't Rob Reilly, but they work with Rob Reilly. I did 3 years of chicken commercials with Rob Reilly, and he's a great example of good enough sucks. Don't settle.
Side anecdote, Vince, I don't know if you remember this. Rob Reilly was one of the kindest dudes we met.
Extremely generous.
We shot a documentary that is still not done 2 years ago right. Called Creators Go West, and we stopped at all these agencies and startups, and we stopped in at Crispin, and they were like so nice to us, and Rob spent a lot of time with us and was just super kind. Like,
absolutely.
Looking back, we're just like stupid kids, man. It's like
and we still are. Yeah. But you were saying.
I derailed.
Look, hey, Rob Reilly is an example of following his bliss.
Yeah.
For and sure. If your listeners Google Rob Reilly, like put Rob Reilly McCann, and you can see articles that show you. He was at an agency called Hill Holiday out of Boston and New York, and we did these Popeye's chicken commercials. And we did them for 3-4 years. It was insane, right? And we had so much fun, and we sat at a bar, and he said, you know, I could run the shop. They're offering me a great position at Hill Holiday. And he goes, but I think I'm going to move to Miami and just be and go back to being a copywriter for a while and see if I can work my way up at this agency. He was already a creative director and the single most powerful force on this Popeye's chicken campaign. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a creative director at his agency. Mm-hmm. And he said, I know it's a cut in pay. I know it's kind of a step back in stature, but I love the work they're doing.
Yeah.
And I have to follow my bliss. So follow your bliss is almost the subheading would be, don't do it for the money.
Yeah.
You know, and if listeners do that, if they do what their gut tells them to do, you know, you got to do a lot of stuff for money.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you don't have to make it your career. You mm-hmm. know, you follow your passion and the rewards will come.
Absolutely, man. It's fantastic advice. I think we'd be remiss not to tie back to self-awareness there. Where does the bliss come from knowing what you want?
Understanding your own motivations.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is what we're talking about here today. And that is why I would like to thank you, Mr. Jordan Brady, so much, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times, for your generosity in joining us.
1,000,000,000,000 times.
Oh, wow.
All right. Well, let me say it.
Who gets to say it?
You're going to say it. Hey, Jordan Brady, thank you so much, man, for joining us. Thank you for being generous with your podcast. It's fucking great. It's so, like, I know you're talking about earlier about doubts about doing, is anybody lit? You know, it's like, this is a classic podcaster syndrome. I'm listening, and it's so helpful to me as somebody trying to come up in directing. Oh my God, like unbelievably valuable. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Can you please do us the honor of shipping it? Can you just give us a ship it?
Vince, Grant, ship it. Okay.